Hi, this is Brandon Kroos. I co-wrote and directed this episode. It is episode season 1, episode 12, The Last Home You Will Ever Know, part 1, Flight. And I think in the title, Brad, you just cut it down to Flight.
The longest title you will ever know.
Here we begin with this awesome montage. And I came up with this two different ways. One was after hearing what Tiven did for episode 11 for Zana's story, how amazing the music could be. It became my stated purpose to write something that Tiven would have to score, A. And B, I hadn't seen it yet, but my co-writer, John Tanzer, had told me about the very last episode, I think, of Farscape has a previously on Farscape, and it's like a second or two from every single episode they have had on Farscape up to that moment, and it sounded awesome. And so that's what I set out to do here. So it became a little longer than a second or two.
But this is one of the things that I really like showing off when we're trying to get people intrigued by the show. The only problem is that it does spoil some things, but
I think that's what we use for the Parsec.
Yeah, because that worked out great.
Oh, come on.
But this is what we use. I think this is what we used for the first Parsecs, yeah.
Right.
I should also point out these are actually not clips. We decided that it would be easier to just re-record all of these lines.
Because the quality was so inconsistent.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. Throughout the whole first season, we were recording
So it was interesting directing you guys to try to mimic exactly, or almost exactly. I think Jairus absolutely not. The direction I gave you was give yourself the most like soulful, like, you know.
Yeah, I remember you saying that.
Because we were running out of absolutely not variations.
A bellow from the depths of your contradictive soul. Just let it out, man. That was a sting.
It is time to face the future.
I love the mocking. We had a heck of a time casting Harpy. Maybe this is more of a discussion for episode 8, but inevitably, I think we started out with a little bit of shifting up or down on the voice, and finally it's just Julia's voice.
She actually sounds this way.
All the time. It's a little unsettling.
Yeah, all the time.
And notice this is the only time that we have the Harpy without reverb on it. Because for once, the Harpy isn't far speaking to her. The Harpy is in the room on her bed. I sure hope it is, because I spent a long time making flappy noises.
Oh yeah, you did. You made flappy noises.
I spent like an hour with my recorder sitting on the bedstand and like moving all my blankets around on my bed, trying to you know, move at the right pace to mimic a giant bird thing.
How large is this bird?
Well, now it's as large as Brad.
With cotton wings, apparently.
Yeah. Maybe it's a big bed bug with wings.
It was a down-filled comforter, so
there were feathers
there
involved.
There was feathers involved.
Maybe it was a down-comforter golem. Depend on
them. You have learned this.
The Harpy is, like, extra snarky in this episode, too. She doesn't outright mock Shauna much otherwise.
But you prefer to feed.
Leave me alone.
Flight is the path of the weak, Shauna. You squander your strength.
Says the bird.
See where your flight takes you, Shauna Brown. But remember, it was the path you
chose.
The beginning,
but not the end of Julia voicing two characters sort of at the same time.
Yeah.
What? Archon, run!
What?
Run!
Can we bolt it from the outside?
The whole thing I try to do with this episode is just go, 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 go. Try to keep moving. And the scene that's the most static is where Sean is the most frustrated. Where she's trying to connect to Jair at the university, and the switchboard is playing around with her. And
yeah, I really like that one.
Let's go now.
That was Andrew, wasn't it? Playing the switchboard guy? Yeah.
He was actually, he was reprising his role as one of the drunks in from the Breaker game.
Right.
Character.
There you go, a little known fact.
Catherine's up! Wake up!
Andrew has actually played a...
No shit, but there is...
Oh, we should cap him up, shouldn't
we? Andrew played more extras. Andrew had more, like, his voice pitched up or pitched down and whatever.
Because he can do such a ridiculous range without even needing...
Plus, we were not so good in season one about, like, finding people other than ourselves.
It wasn't until season two that we really actually tried to
get... Which was all because of the because of Neil and all his PMRP.
That's true, yeah. Neil hooked us up with a local theater troupe, basically, that had a lot of people.
He just has, like, infinite extras now.
Well, we have a big black
but yeah, with their in the brief game, morning, sounds like the Wing Herald to me. Andrew, didn't he do like all three of these?
I did one of them, unfortunately.
So he did two.
I wish he'd done all three.
No, just come.
Yeah, we were talking a little bit earlier about Kyleb. Anything you want to say about Kyleb?
Not a thing.
We were talking about how you very much did not want to play him.
The fact that I voiced Kyleb was a failure of planning, I think. Or Andrea claimed she liked the voice or something, I don't know. Or I don't think it was intended for him to come back. And then I think John wrote him into a script.
Have the other writers been voiced any characters? Is John or Missy?
No, John was going to do Corvin in season 2. He's the driver in Horror and Shauna's Caravan.
Well, that was
and
the joke. He
that was the joke. His only line is,
and John didn't deliver that.
Because he didn't show up.
Yeah, Renan, who was operating our soundboard at the time.
Yeah, you're right. I gotta force John and Missy. I have cameos.
Yeah, we don't have too much.
I haven't done one yet either.
Do you want to?
I don't know.
Maybe in the finale, the cast can have a conversation with the show.
We can just talk about for like.
Yes, you will.
Bow.
If you have like a, if we ever, you guys should write like a bard or something, some traveling minstrel, and let Tivin play him.
No, I don't think I'm going to be doing any singing. I had my chance at that, and I gave it to Sequoia.
He could play the saxophone or whatever. No, what?
Trombone.
Trombone, sorry.
Loudy and trombone.
I know a surprising number of trombonists. Because Julian plays the trombone, too.
Yes, he does.
And Ricky, who has played a couple of extras, plays a trombone. We probably have more trombonists than any other type of musician represented on Second Shift.
It's quite unhelpful.
Come on, we could have a trombone. You should write something for three trombones in the Loudmian style. You know, get some of that Middle Eastern flair.
Think about it.
We should take a poll of how many trombones are in our audience.
Should go for
the hold music. This was fought and fought. I insisted on it. People didn't like it.
Oh, people didn't want to have hold music?
I was just noticing in the...
somebody commented about
that. Yeah, in some of the commentary on the forum, I'm looking...
in Lundi.
One of the people, I think... Stephen Smed is doing his, like, blow-by-blow as he listens to the episode commentary, and there's this one line, Lundi has hold music?
Well, it really doesn't make sense, because it's supposed to be magical phones. They're not real phones.
No, they've actually got a band that comes on.
That's magical hold music. What do you want?
Like, do they have recordings?
Sure. You know? No, the band's on call.
Yeah.
They wait in the room.
Magical recording.
They're like, listen to the band while I go find Jared.
It was funny, okay?
If you don't like it, get on the internet and complain.
I serve humor, not continuity.
5 wooden swords and a small wooden shield. You're kidding me.
Only 3.
Yay, more spell bombs, because that's what the world needs right now. Spell bombs.
Never got to use those, did they?
We have Catherine's bow, Fesmer's magic, and you two can use the sword sticks. We also have your magic. That's no small thing.
Excuse me, it's called a bocon.
About how I should run.
So yes. we were talking in an earlier episode, Brandon, about how Catherine gets this badass magic bow, like, and is fully tricked out Dungeons & Dragons cartoon style.
Yeah.
And it doesn't get to do anything with it.
Because it's spectacle. What do you do with it, really, in audio?
Yeah, okay.
I'm going flip, flip, flip.
That was sort of what we had supposed, was it's kind of hard to be like, wow, Catherine, that was an awesome shot. Gee, yeah.
The thing is, we did that in episode three. Four.
Really? You could have had her been like Legolas and like counting up all her kills. How awesome would that have been?
Give Mike an axe and let them.
I'm 32 already.
Yeah, give Mike an axe and let them compete, and that would be awesome.
We did that whole thing with having an actual sword fight, and we wrote out the soul sword fight, and you know, it was weird. It was really awkward and hard to try. And we actually recorded it with swords.
Battle just kind of sounds like battle. Yeah, it's really hard to like get into character moments.
Yeah,
I don't know. I'm digging Tibbin's idea of having give Mike an axe and let him compete with like it'd be totally like Legolas and Gimli, only without as much sexual tension.
Gross.
So
dwarves and elves shouldn't do it.
What do you mean? You get normal sized people.
Maybe that's how the humans were created.
There we go.
There was much debate about Zana giving Shauna the second syllable, right?
Really?
Yeah, because it was felt that Catherine and Zana had the closest relationship. And this is actually resolved later in season two. But at the time, we didn't.
So the teacher gives the second syllable? Is that...
It's the mentor, like the closest, most trusted sort of life advisor. And they've had a few, like, you know, conversations, and Shauna's confided, and Zana thinks she hasn't anyone else, but I think it was felt among us, anyway, that she and Catherine had a closer relationship.
But Catherine wasn't from Bondi, so it'd be kind of weird for her to give her another
relationship.
Tibbin.
This is her giving, you know, giving a she's giving the second syllable. Yeah.
Blooper.
Well, it was kind of.
We're not allowed. We can't have bloopers here.
Yeah.
We resolve later in season two Zana felt that Shauna needed it.
Yeah.
Needed the soul. It was the strength and all that.
Yeah, it's like.
And they were close, but.
Yeah, well, frankly, I really like that explanation. Because Catherine is very. Catherine.
Oh, so now you're interested.
Say what you will about her, she has confidence. She has more confidence than Shauna does. And so I thought that explanation made a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Apologies. I am now.
Now that we know it's real, not just Shauna being sleep deprived and crazy, you mean?
Actually,
what, Archon?
We cannot say for certain that it is real.
What? It is not
what?
That I do not believe you, Shay.
Wah, wah, wah?
What the hell are you talking about? You saw it too.
In truth, I do not know that I saw anything.
Why are you so angry?
Yeah, I took the anger. You do good anger. I don't want to piss you off now.
Frightened. And I gotta say, this episode, as far as... the fan reaction, this worked out exactly the way that it was hoped, because right at this point, during at least one person's sort of live blogging of the episode, is saying, something's wrong here, what's Archon doing?
I am so amazed and happy and relieved that we held the reveal of Archon being the traitor till the end of this episode. I can't believe no one caught on to it. I think there were a few suspicions on the forums, but no one outright said. But it was something we knew from the very beginning. We layered in piece by piece.
Yeah, I didn't know until I read the script of this one that I was like, oh, Archon's...
Even after episode 8, no one caught it.
Which is kind of crazy.
That's the torture?
Yeah. I mean, it... But, well, I guess we did a misdirect of introducing like another sort of
The red circle. I still don't really understand what the red circle is. Bathing all in its magical
glow. They're kind of
another time, perhaps.
Yeah, the short version is the Legion is the big international syndicate, and the red circle is local.
Shauna, are you okay? I mean, you know, considering.
Well, now that we're moving.
So they like the Legionnaire ideal, but they'd sort of take the think globally, act locally.
The university does a really good job of keeping the Legion at least out of Latin Aid, because it's important to the university. it's an important town. But there are smaller groups that don't directly oppose university in the way the Legion does. They're like, they're mobs, basically. Mafia.
At least we know we're going in the right direction.
Would any of you care for some food?
Come on, I don't think it's the right time for that.
Actually, I could eat. Another callback to the very first episode.
Now is always the time for food.
That was another one. Man, I had this long list of things that I really wanted to see on merchandise.
There's a lot of really great one-liners.
Please do suck it, which is still one of my absolute favorites. Seriously, who wouldn't want a bumper? Who wouldn't want a bumper sticker that says "Please do suck it" right above the exhaust pipe?
Yeah.
Get it on Cafe Press.
Good time for bumper stickers, you know.
Get it on Cafe Press or someone else does.
Yeah, unfortunately, Cafe Press costs a lot. I did not dream that, Shanna. Your sleep has been scarce. We've got stuff on Cafe Press. If anyone disagrees with me, please buy stuff. Yes, we had pink shirts. See, that's a real shame, because when Lexi first showed us the drawing for that pink shirt, I thought it was the coolest thing I'd ever seen. There's all these things that we, the entire cast, is like, wow, that's so cool! And we put it out there, and the universal reaction from everyone else in the world is, what? We are apparently cosmopolitan elitists who are out of touch with the common man.
I just realized that.
And perhaps in your own fantasy world.
In this commentary, did I introduce myself and then immediately start talking?
Yes, you did. Fortunately, the rest of us were classy enough.
Well, we can still introduce ourselves now. This is Tim and Weinstock, composer of the show.
This is Becky Harrington.
And this is Brad Smith. I'm the tech producer thing, and Jareth.
I'm Brandon Crowe, and mine is the only voice that matters.
We'll just all shut up and let Brandon go back to his show.
Yes. Proceed.
Yes, Brandon. Tell us more about your show. I'm intrigued by it. It sounds like it would be awesome.
Yeah, I don't understand. Did you do all of these voices yourself?
I should totally listen to this sometime, especially if there's some sort of great behind-the-scenes commentary.
Well, I had some help, but... I get it from my father's side of the
family. No. Bit of a workaholic sometimes. Whenever
I
want.
I do not have time for these. Wow, you got somewhere else to be? No, maybe you can fool everyone else.
What is Mike talking about being able to clip that?
This is where Mike seemingly...
Would he be the smartass?
Oh. he seemingly calls Archon about having, like, big bad secrets, and then it turns out that he doesn't.
You're afraid of losing us.
Yes.
Ah!
It's funny because he has this insight to Archon that something isn't quite forthright there, but it's not what he thinks it is. And our god, you know.
If there'd been more time,
Mike fails his beguinen role, basically.
Here's when you're supposed to know exactly what I'm thinking, so I don't have to spell it out, make an ass of myself.
Do we have a future? Will we be stuck in Boston together for a year?
Spoiler alert.
It is an unusual quality, which can be mistaken for an ill quality, I suppose, but I do admire you a great deal. I do wish there was more time.
Well, so are there crickets in Lamdi?
Apparently.
What do they look like?
No, those are some other very large insect.
There's an insect
the size of a building.
Cricket.
That just sounds very like far away.
There's an insect that looks nothing like a cricket, but for some reason translates to cricket. Which is how everything else works.
We just hear its sound as being.
Goats apparently look more like a possum than so.
when you put on the translation pendant, they sound like crickets.
Yes, they're actually going. It's really irritating.
Yeah, you don't want to hear what this place sounds like without the translation pendant.
I think we're good, Catherine. We can't hear the others anymore.
Oh.
We've used the exact same nighttime ambience, and really the exact same daytime ambience for every single outdoor scene in season one, I think. So it's just the same bugs all the time, every night.
How many bugs are there supposed to be?
Yeah, it's not like they travel.
So this is the...
We should have auditioned some extra books, just so we had some variety. You know?
Guys, I'm trying to talk about the episode.
We're talking about books here!
Yes, Brandon, what do you want to tell us about your show? Give us some insight.
Well, as long as you do. When I dreamed of Second Shift, when Shauna came to me, this is the first falling out between Shauna and Catherine, right? I think this is the first time they have ever directly argued.
Why are you trying to convince me to stay?
I'm not. It's
at least to this extent, like this much of a sort of shutdown, stomp away. Party
for you, so I'll just go.
Oh yeah, because it's been a thrill a minute for me.
Well, I mean, there has been tension between Shauna and Catherine, like in Civil War.
Oh, you hated the dance. Seems like you're only happy when you're screaming your head off.
I think their most venomous argument.
Well, there aren't too many happy moments to pick from between Mike's and your cranky attitude.
Oh, cranky? Considering the exhaustion. Nightmares and figuring out a way home entirely by myself. I think I'm entitled to a bad mood now and then.
Maybe we would have helped you if you'd let us, but instead you have to be a complete.
You wouldn't believe how fun and easy it is to write fights when you're popped up on caffeine at Starbucks during your lunch break, writing longhand. It really all just comes to you. You don't want to cut any of it, and then you hear it out loud. And it's like,
I could
cut a little of that.
As someone who, one of my real weak points is changing gears from your one mode of thinking you're doing to another. I've got to give you guys props for just like, okay, I'm going to do my day job and then on my lunch break run over to Starbucks and write an episode. That is impressive, sir.
Season 1 was a crazy, crazy time. There was almost no separation between working, living, breathing, writing. I mean, it was like we were laying down the tracks as the train was coming.
Yeah.
Trust me? We were getting these out like 3 weeks apart, right?
Yeah, I mean, we were aiming for 2 weeks and we hit it some of the time, and when we were late, it was like the most time we had between episodes was, sadly enough, between parts of the finale, and that was like 5 or 6 weeks or something like that. Yeah. Versus
we were constantly in the bathroom on the toilet writing stuff on napkins.
No, not constantly. It happened once, and now that's always your story about me. No, there was, I don't even remember which episode it was, but the scene had to be written. It was the only one that hadn't been written yet, and I needed to get the script to you guys by noon or something. So, I took a piece of paper to the bathroom, sat down.
Well, I also remember you saying one time that you couldn't write at work as much because your desk got moved and your boss could see your computer.
My boss listens to me.
We should cut that. Thank you, Brandon's boss. It was a sacrifice for art. You're now a patron of the arts. Congratulations. Don't squander it.
For the record, I don't write at work anymore.
Yeah, well, see, that's one of the reasons the series production has slowed down so much. Because I did the same thing. Like, I would teach classes, and my classes would alternate between lecture and lab work where the students were doing stuff. And I did this very, very rarely. It was usually in my evenings or on weeks when I wasn't teaching and I had other stuff to do. You know, you'd either work a full day of regular work and then come home and work like another full day of second shift stuff. Or I have to admit, there was a period where they started to meld a lot more than they should have.
Yeah.
And there was at least one episode where I was trying to discreetly sit there with a headphone over one ear, editing an episode while my students were working on their lab work. I just have to pause anytime somebody had a question or something. And then when class was over, I'd just take my laptop and hop over to Denny's and finish the scene.
Yeah, and then there's John Gabufo, who was one of our editors for a while, who worked. What did he do? Like something on the. Like,
I think he made appointments.
Telemarketing
for
or something.
A real estate agent. Oh,
something.
Yeah, something.
I know he was on the phone all day.
Yeah.
He would go on the phone all day with customers while editing at work. Doing our audio editing.
Yeah, and so this, and I've said this a million times before, and anybody who's liable to listen to this has probably heard our vociferous apologies and whatnot, but, you know, we finally all reached a point where we couldn't get away with working at work anymore, either because we'd milked the privilege too much or we had new responsibilities, and...
I don't feel the urgency anymore. It might be because the scripts are, like, five ahead of where you guys are in production.
That's not true. We finished recording... Well, in the production, yes. We finished recording 12.
Yeah.
Yeah, we recorded episodes.
We're caught up with you in recording.
But in season one, you guys, like, you would release an episode, and I hadn't even started writing the next one yet. Like, that's how much they overlapped.
Well, we're all in such an urgency, and we're all going crazy.
Yeah, and just keeping up that. I'm so proud that we kept up that pace.
Yeah.
Really.
It almost killed us all, but it's quite a feat.
It was really impressive, but it was also kind of crazy.
Guys,
you can't
I think
be.
I just saw... Ben's away, someone's out there.
Jared?
That's why I haven't directed any of season two yet. As the de facto director for the remainder of season one. And just like, you know, we recorded in my basement. I was directing it, I was writing it.
Yeah, and we would have...
Here's more Tiven's music.
Show yourselves!
Oh, come on! They can turn invisible?
Yes.
Julia playing her own mother.
Yeah.
I think we did quite well, given
this was pretty complicated sound effects wise, like how they sound when they're cloaked, how they sound when the helmet's on.
Yeah.
See, and this too is kind of spectacle. It's every so often we try to get kind of, dare I say, epic with the scenes, you know, as to what's going on sonically, and try to express things that are usually visual. You know, action stuff, people galloping into the rescue and hitting that person. Sometimes it works, sometimes.
Archon, he and Buxton will fly, Shayna. Truly, I had no choice.
You're dead, Archon, do you hear me?
This is Keith. Yes,
this was another one of those moments when I figured out what you guys were doing, or when we talked about what we were doing.
We could not have overcome the Red Circle without you. If you can forgive the deception.
I just gotta talk for a second about Alexa Lark. The first time he showed up was my first time trying to do another voice, and I totally failed.
Go to hell.
He sounds a little
I think
like
this worked a little bit better.
We bet you know you
but,
we do.
Oh, and I spent a lot of time trying to figure out, because, like, I can...
Archon, you were planning this
all I'm kind of flexible as a voice actor if I get to do cartoony, wacky voices, but doing multiple voices
it's
that sound like actual people and do the accent, that was a lot harder than I thought it would be. But no, I'm sorry, I was just complimenting your writing here.
Oh, go ahead, please.
when I first realized, or when we first started talking about where this was going, like, I am so happy to be part of a production that is actually not scared to do, like, stuff like this, and have some really non-trivial drama going on between the characters, and real upsets, and have bad things happen to the good characters, and have things that the audience doesn't want to see happen with things like Archon and whatnot.
I'm honored to work with people who actually dare to speak the things we put on paper, because hats off to you. I don't know if I could. In fact, I refused to several times.
This is true. What is it that you
hope to accomplish? Tiffany, do you have anything to say about the music here?
Yeah, I mean, I was just trying to sort of build the drama. I will say, I sort of scored each of these.
We give you too little credit.
Archon
knocks Shayna out of there. You were right. And then I sort of scored her conversation with Kaith with the bassoon. And then I did the conversation with Mike with the violin and sort of a little bit of a romantic theme in there.
Cool.
To sort of hint at the idea that and I think we talked about this a little bit, that they were going to sort of have some sort of romantic future.
That's cool.
That we didn't know about at the time.
There were two last-minute post-production saves in this episode. You can kind of hear them. One is when they're walking to the clearing and Shauna clarifies what day it is and when they're going, and it actually turns out to be a day earlier than Silver Knight proper, and it's like we got into recording it, we realized that there was an inconsistency in the script. We were saying it was Silver Knight, but calendar-wise it wouldn't. Anyway, there was that, and the other one was Archon didn't knock Fesmer out. We didn't record her doing that, and I think we just we found Fesmer saying Shay, and we kind of like pitched it up and cut it off and did the sound effect right after.
I didn't remember that at all. That was one of the more complex scenes that we've done, as far as like it's really, really hard to do fight scenes per se. And I mean, the next time we tried to do a real serious, well, we have some fight scenes in 13.
This is where I can't read the credits, which is something I reprised in the latest Arisa show. I blanked on Lexi's name. I went off script for a second, and exactly what I feared would happen happened.
Well, to be fair, she did change it recently.
Yeah, once she settles on a name. Or
Lexi or Lily or whatever the hell she is this week.
I'll just call her Al.
LG.
I insist on Lexifer. Well, that's that.
Okay.
Alright, well, thank you for listening.
Yes. Oh, copyright? Brad.
These things are copyrighted?
They are, if you say they are. They are.
This is rated under Creative Commons. Ha! Suck it!